the ninth in our series of complete performances of the operas of Gilbert and Sullivan. Today's opera is Radigo, or The Witch's Curse. Today, we have invited you to join us in Cornwall at the end of the Napoleonic Wars. We are in the tiny fishing village of Red Erin, and as we stand here, looking down the steep slope towards the little harbour with its fishing boats lying motionless in the sun, the only movement to be seen is that of the occasional swan gliding across the placid water. It is difficult to imagine that this place could be the scene of any supernatural occurrence. But just now, the village sleeps peacefully, as it were, exhausted by the heat. But wait a moment. I think the peace is about to be disturbed, for over there I can see a group of young girls who seem to be dressed as bridesmaids. They are making for that little whitewashed cottage with the thatched roof and well-kept garden. Old Dame Hannah lives there with the lovely orphan Rose Maybud. Let's go a little closer.
Gentle maidens, you sing well, but vainly, for Rose is still heart-free and looks but coldly upon her many suitors.
It's very disappointing, Dame Hannah. Every young man in the village is in love with her, but they are appalled by her beauty and modesty and won't declare themselves. So until she makes her own choice, there's no chance for anybody else.
This is perhaps the only village in the world that possesses an endowed corps of professional bridesmaids, who are bound to be on duty every day from 10 to 4. And it is at least 6 months since our services were required. The pious charity by which we exist is practically wasted.
We shall be disendowed. That will be the end of it. Jane Hannah, you're a nice old person. You could marry if you liked. But there's old Adam, Robin's faithful servant. He loves you with all the frenzy of a boy of 14.
Nay, that may never be, for I am pledged.
To whom?
To an eternal maidenhood.
Oh.
Many years ago, I was betrothed to a godlike youth who wooed me under an assumed name. But on the very day upon which our wedding was to have been celebrated, I discovered that he was no other than Sir Roderick Murgatroyd, one of the bad baronets of Ruddigore, and the uncle of the man who now bears that title. As a son of that accursed race, he was no husband for an honest girl. So, madly as I loved him, I left him then and there. He died but 10 years since, but I never saw him again.
But why should you not marry a bad baronet of Ruddigore?
All baronets are bad, but was he worse than other baronets?
My child, he was a curse.
But who cursed him? Not you, I trust.
The curse is on all his line, and has been ever since the time of Sir Rupert, the first baronet. Listen, and you shall hear the legend.
His leisure and his riches he ruthlessly employed in persecuting witches. With fear in face of grace, he ducked them in his lake. He'd break their bones with sticks and salt and burn them up the on the village green, a palsied hag he roasted, and what took place by weeks of his compulsion devoted. For as the thought of him seized on each withered limb, a writhing pain did fire and flame, yet forth it
away, dear Rose, on some errand of charity, as is thy wont.
A few gifts, dear aunt, for deserving villagers. Lo, here is some peppermint rock for old Gaffer Gadderby, a set of false teeth for pretty little Ruth Rowbottom, and a pound of snuff for the poor orphan girl on the hill.
Ah, Rose, pity that so much goodness should not help to make some gallant youth happy for life. Rose, Why dost thou harden that little heart of thine? Is there none hereaway whom thou couldst love?
And if there were such an one, verily, it would ill become me to tell him so.
Nay, dear one, where true love is, there is little need of prim formality.
Hush, dear aunt, for thy words pain me sorely. Hung in a plated dish cover to the knocker of the workhouse door, with naught that I could call mine own, save a change of baby linen and a book of etiquette. Little wonder if I have always regarded that work as a voice from a parent's tomb. This hallowed volume, composed, if I may believe the title page, by no less an authority than the wife of a Lord Mayor, has been through life my guide and monitor. By its solemn precepts, I have learned to test the moral worth of all who approach me. The man who bites his bread or eats peas with a knife, I look upon as a lost creature. And he who has not acquired the proper way of entering and leaving a room is the object of my pitying horror. There are those in this village who bite their nails, dear aunt, and nearly all are wont to use their pocket combs in public places. In truth, I could pursue this painful theme much further, but behold, I have said enough.
But is there not one among them who is faultless in thine eyes? For example, young Robin. He combines the manners of a marquis with the morals of a Methodist. Couldst thou not love him?
And even if I could, how should I confess it unto him? For lo, he is shy and saith naught.
Point him out to me, and I would point him out to you. But here
little did the good soul think when she breathed the hallowed name of Robin that he would do even as well as another. But he resembleth all the youths in this village in that he is unduly bashful in my presence. And lo, it is hard to bring him to the point. But soft, he is here.
Mistress Rose.
Master Robin.
I wish to say that it is fine.
It is passing fine.
But we do want rain.
I sorely. Is that all?
That is all.
Good day, Master Robin.
Good day, Mistress Rose.
I beg pardon. You were about to say?
I would fain consult you.
Truly?
It is about a friend.
In truth, I have a friend myself.
Indeed. I mean, of course.
And I would fain consult you.
About him?
About her.
Let us consult one another.
I know a youth who loves a little maid. Hey, but his face is a sight for to see. Silent is he, for he's modest and afraid. Hey, but he's timid as you can be.
I know a maid who loves a man as you.
Poor child. I sometimes think that if she wasn't quite so particular, I might venture. But no. No, even then I should be unworthy of her.
My kind master is sad.
Ah, Adam.
Dear Sir Riven Murgatroyd.
Hush, as you love me, breathe not that hated name. 20 years ago, in horror at the prospect of inheriting that hideous title, and with it the ban that compels all who succeed to the baronetcy to commit at least one deadly crime per day for life, I fled my home and concealed myself in this innocent village under the name of Robin Oakapple. My younger brother, Despard, believing me to be dead, succeeded to the title and its attendant curse. For 20 years I have been dead and buried. Don't dig me up now.
Dear master, it shall be as you wish, for have I not sworn to obey you forever in all things? Yet, as we're here alone, let me call you by your own right title once more.
Oh, very well.
Sir Riven Murgatroyd, Baronet of Runnigore. It's like 8 hours of the seaside.
My poor old friend. Would there were more like you.
Would there were indeed. But I bring you good tidings. Your foster brother, Richard, has returned from sea. His ship, the Tom Tit, rides yonder at anchor, and he himself is even now in this very village.
My beloved foster brother. No, it cannot be.
It cannot be so. And see, he comes this way.
She proved to be a frigate, and she up with a port, and fires with a 32. It's come and come and near, but we answered with a cheer, which paralyzed the Polly Boo. You see, which paralyzed the Polly Boo. Then our kept me up, and he says he, this chap we need not fear. We can take her if we like. She's nothing but a strike, but she's only a darn man fear. You see, she's only a darn man fear. But to fight a French for lal, it's like hitting of a gal. It's a lovely thing for to do. For we, with all our faults, while we're sturdy British folk, why she's only a poor Polly Boo. You see, why she's only a poor Polly Boo. We up with our helm and we scud before the breeze as we give the compassionating cheer. Froggy answers with a shout as he sees us go about, which was grateful of the poor man's fear. You see, which was grateful of the poor man's fear. And I'll wager in their joy they kiss each other's cheek, which is what them foreigners do. And they bless their lucky stars, we were hardy British cars who had pity on a poor Polly Boo. You see, who had pity on a poor Polly Boo.
Oh, my God. again.
My beloved foster brother and very dearest friend, welcome home again after 10 long years at sea. It is such deeds as you have just described that cause our flag to be loved and dreaded throughout the civilized world.
Why, Lord love ye, Rob, that but a trifle to what we have done in the way of sparing life. I believe I may say without exaggeration that the merciful little Tom Tate has spared more French frigates than any craft afloat. But 'tain't for a British seaman to brag, so I'll just stow me joint tackle and belay. But vast heaving, messmate, what's brought you all a cockbill?
Alas, Dick, I love Rose Maybud, and love in vain.
You love in vain? Oh, calm, that's too good. Why, you're a fine, strapping, muscular young fella. Tall and strong as a t'gallon mast, taut as a forestay. Aye, and a baronite to boot, if all had their rights.
Hush, Richard, not a word about my true rank, which none here suspect. Yes, I know well enough that few men are better calculated to win a woman's heart than I. I'm a fine fellow, Dick, and worthy any woman's love. Happy the girl that gets me, say I. But I'm timid, Dick. Shy, nervous, modest, retiring, diffident. And I cannot tell her, Dick, I cannot tell her. Ah, you've no idea what a poor opinion I have of myself, and how little I deserve it.
Robin, do you call to mind how years ago we swore that, come what might, we would always act upon our heart's dictates?
Aye, Dick, and I've always kept that oath. In doubt, difficulty, and danger, I've always asked my heart what I should do, and it has never failed me.
Right. Let your heart be your compass with a clear conscience for your binnacle light, and you'll sail 10 knots on a bowline clear of shoals, rocks, and quicksands. Well, now, what does my heart say in this here difficult situation? Why, it says, Dick, it says. It calls me Dick, because it's known me from a babby. Dick, it says, you ain't shy, you ain't modest. Speak you up for him as is.
For me?
Robin, me lad, just you lay me alongside, and when she's becalmed under me lee, I'll spin her a yarn that'll serve to fish you two together for life.
Will you do this thing for me? Can you, do you think? Yes, there's no false modesty about you. Your, what I would call, a bumptious self-assertiveness.
Huh?
I mean the expression in its complimentary sense.
Oh.
Has already made you a bosun's mate. And it will make an admiral of you in time if you work it properly, you dear, incompetent old impostor. My dear fellow, I give my right arm for 1/10 of your modest assurance.
My boy, you may take it from me that of all the afflictions accursed with which a man saddled and hampered and addled of diffident nature's the worst, though clever as clever can be, a crichton of early romance, you must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet or trust, you haven't a chance. If you wish in the world to advance your merit you're bound to enhance, you must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet or trust, you haven't a chance. Now take, for example, my case. I've a bright intellectual brain. In all London City, there's no one so witty I've talked to again and again. I've a highly intelligent face. My features cannot be denied. But whatever I try, that I save in and wiser. I'm modestly personified. If you wish in the world to advance your merit, you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet, or trust you have the chance. As a poet, I'm tender and quaint. I've passion and fervor and grace. From Ovid and Horace to Swinburne and Morris, they all of them take a back pace. Then I sing and I play and I paint, though none are accomplished as I. To say so at reason, you ask me the reason. I'm vivid and modest and shy. If you wish in the world to advance your merit, you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet or trust, you haven't a chance. If you wish in the world to advance your merit, you're bound to enhance. You must stir it and stamp it and blow your own trumpet or trust, you haven't a chance.
It's a thousand pities he's such a poor opinion of himself, for a finer fella don't walk. Well, I'll do my best for him. Plead for him as though it was for your own father. That's what my heart to remark it to me just now. Oh, but here she comes. Steady. Steady it is. By the port admiral, but she's a tight little craft. Come, she's not for you. And yet, she's fit to marry Lord Nelson. By the flag of old England, I can't look at her unmoved.
Sir, you are agitated.
Aye, my lass, well said. I am agitated, true enough. Took flat aback, my girl. But 'tis not. 'Twill pass. This here heart of mine's a dictation to me like anything. Question is, have I a right to disregard its promptings?
Can I do aught to relieve thine anguish? For it seemeth to me that thou art in sore trouble. This apple?
No, my lass, ain't that. I'm took flat aback. Par, buckle me if you ain't the loveliest gal I ever set eyes on. There, I can't say fairer than that, can I?
No. The question is it meet that an utter stranger should thus express himself? Now, what says my book of etiquette? Yes, always speak the truth.
I'd no thoughts of saying this here to you on my own account, for truth to tell, I was chartered by another. But when I see you, me heart it up, and it says it, this is the very last for you, Dick. Speak up to her, Dick, it says. It calls me Dick, because we was at school together. Tell her all, Dick, it says. Never sail under false colors. It's mean. That's what me heart tells me to say, and in my rough, common sailor fashion, I've said it. And I'm a-waiting for your reply. I'm a-trembling, miss. Looky here. That's nervousness.
Now, how should a maiden deal with such an one? Keep no one in unnecessary suspense. Behold, I will not keep you in unnecessary suspense. Accepting an offer of marriage, do so with apparent hesitation. I take you, but with a certain show of reluctance. Avoid any appearance of eagerness. Though you will bear in mind that I am far from anxious to do so. A little show of emotion will not be misplaced. Pardon this tear.
Rose, you've made me the happiest blue jacket in England. I wouldn't change places with the Admiral of the Fleet, no matter who he's a-hugging off at this present moment. But, axing your pardon, miss, might I be permitted to salute the flag I'm going to sail under?
An engaged young lady should not permit too many familiarities. Once.
Confess this war is over, oh my love. Embrace my tender lover, oh my love. From tempest to elbow, from walls alarm. Oh, give me shelter within the arm. Oh, give me shelter within the dawn. My smile on your ring, the haunting storming, if me trembling,
Well, what news? Have you spoken to her?
Aye, my lad, I have, so to speak, spoke her.
And she refuses?
Why, no, I can't truly say she do.
Then she accepts, my darling.
Hail the bridegroom, hail the bride. Let the nuptial knot be tied.
What should a maiden do when she is embraced by the wrong gentleman?
Belay, my lad, belay. You don't understand.
Oh, sir, belay. I beseech you.
You see, it's like this. She accepts, but it's me, you.
Hold your tongues, will you? Now then, what does this mean?
My poor lad, my heart grieves for thee, but it's like this. The moment I see her, and just as I was going to mention your name, my heart, it up and it says it, Dick, you fell in love with her yourself, it says. Be honest and sailor-like. Don't skulk under false colors. Speak up, it says. Take her, your dog, and with her, my blessing.
Hey, will you be quiet? Go away!
Vulgar girls. What could I do? I'm bound to obey my heart's dictates.
Of course, no doubt. It's quite right. I don't mind. That is, not particularly, only it's... It is disappointing, you know.
Oh, but, sir, I knew not that thou didst seek me in wedlock, or in very truth I should not have hearkened unto this man. For behold, he is but a lowly mariner and very poor withal, whereas thou art a tiller of the land, and thou hast fat oxen, and many sheep and swine, a considerable dairy farm, and much corn and oil.
That's true, my lass, but it's done now, ain't it, Rob?
Still, it may be that I should not be happy in thy love. I am passing young and little able to judge. Moreover, as to thy character, I know naught.
Nay, Rose, I'll answer for that. Dick has won thy love fairly. Broken-hearted as I am, I'll stand up for Dick through thick and thin.
Thank ye, messmate. That's well said. That's spoken honest. Thank ye, Rob.
Yet methinks I have heard that sailors are but worldly men, and little prone to lead serious and thoughtful lives.
And what then? Admit that Dick is not a steady character, and that when he's excited he uses language that would make your hair curl. Grant that he does. It's the truth, and I'm not going to deny it. But look at his good qualities. He's as nimble as a pony, and his hornpipe is the talk of the fleet. There, and that's only a bit of it.
Thank you, Rob. That's well spoken. Thank you, Rob.
But it may be that he drinketh strong waters which do bemuse a man and make him even as the wild beasts of the desert.
Well, suppose he does, and I don't say he don't, for rum's his bane and ever has been. He does drink, I won't deny it. But what of that? Look at his arms. Tattooed to the shoulder. No, I won't hear a word against Dick.
But they say that mariners are but rarely true to those whom they profess to love.
Granted. I don't say that Dick isn't as bad as any of them. You are, you know you are, you dog. A devil of a fellow. A regular out-and-out Lothario. But what then? You can't have everything. And a better hand at turning in a dead eye don't walk a deck. And what an accomplishment that is in a family man. No, not a word against Dick. I'll stick up for him through thick and thin.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. You're a true friend. I've acted according to my heart's dictates, and such orders as them no man should disobey.
In vain all I search and wide, your heart will be your only guide. In poverty and saving wine, your friend is poor, your soul is kind.
My heart says to this great strike, she can't be true, she's just the sort of girl you like. You know you do, if all of me her heart should gain, I shall resign. That's what it says to me quite plain, this heart of mine, this heart of mine.
My heart says you've a prosperous lot. With acres wide, you mean to settle all you've got upon your bride. It don't pretend to shake my axe, my word or sign. It really ain't a simple fact. This heart of mine, this heart of mine.
It my heart is white, it now is black, it then said left, it now is right. Heart up and tank, I will go bravely this train. You tell me so, but you would exchange his mind again. I let you know, I let you know.
You play all I could and why, no doubt your heart could be your guide. But if you go quick, then you'll find, for heart up and tank, I'll tell you mine.
Rose and Robin leave, arm in arm, while Richard is left to wander off alone, feeling very sorry for himself. But now comes the strange figure of a young girl clad in picturesque tatters. Her feet are bare, and her long hair falls wildly about her shoulders. Her name is Margaret. Mad Margaret, the villagers call her.
Alas, the cruel awaking, set her all to soften thy sorrow? This apple?
No. Tell me, are you mad?
I? No. That is, I think not.
That's well. Then you don't love Sir Despard Murgatroyd. All mad girls love him. I love him. And poor Mad Margaret. Crazy Meg. Poor Peg.
Thou lovest the bad Baroness of Ruddigal?
Oh, horrible, too horrible. You pity me? Then be my mother. The squirrel had a mother, but she drank and the squirrel fled. Hush! They sing a brave song in our parts. It runs somewhat thus. The cat and the dog and the little puppy sat down in a, down in a, in a... I forget what they sat down in, but so the song goes. Listen. I've come to pinch her.
Mercy. Whom?
You mean who?
Nay, it is the accusative after the verb.
True. I have come to pinch Rose Maybud.
Rose Maybud?
Aye. I love him. He loved me once, but that's all gone. He gave me an Italian glance and made me his. He will give her an Italian glance and make her his. But it shall not be, for I'll stamp on her, stamp on her, stamp on her. Did you ever kill anybody? No? Why not? Listen. I killed a fly this morning. It buzzed and I wouldn't have it, so it died. Pop! So shall she.
But behold, I am Rose Maybud, and I would fain not die. Pop!
You are Rose Maybud.
Yes, sweet Rose Maybud.
Strange, they told me she was beautiful. And he loves you. No, no, if I thought that, I would treat you as the auctioneer and land agent treated the ladybird. I would rend you asunder.
Nay, be pacified. For behold, I'm pledged to another, and lo, we are to be wedded this very day.
Swear me that. Come to a commissioner and let me have it on affidavit.
I once made an affidavit, but it died.
It died. It died.
But see, they come. Said Despard and his evil crew. Hide, hide. They are all mad. Quite mad. What makes you think that?
Hush.
They sing choruses in public. That's mad enough, I think.
Go, hide away, or they will seize you. Hush. Quite softly. Quite, quite softly.
I'm sorry.
Baronet.
Oh, why am I moody and sad? And why am I guiltily mad? Because I am thoroughly bad. You'll see that once in my face. Oh, why am I husky and hoarse? It's the workings of conscience, of course. And happiness stands for him all. At least it does so in my case. When in crime one is fully employed, your expression gets warped and destroyed. It's a penalty none can avoid. I once was a nice-looking youth, but like stone from a strong catapult, I rusted my terrible cut. Observe the unpleasant result. Indeed, I am telling the truth. Oh, innocent, happy though poor, if I had been virtuous, I'm sure, I should be as nice-looking as you're. You are very nice-looking indeed. Oh, innocent, little in time, a vile existence of crime. And now, if you please, we'll proceed. Children,
how they loathe me. Me whose hands are certainly steeped in infamy, but whose heart is as the heart of a little child. But what is a poor baronet to do when a whole picture gallery of ancestors step down from their frames and threaten him with an excruciating death if he hesitate to commit his daily crime? But, ha-ha, I am even with them. I get my crime over the first thing in the morning, and then, ha-ha, for the rest of the day, I do good, I do good, I do good. 2 days since, I stole a child and built an orphan asylum. Yesterday, I robbed a bank and endowed a bishopric. Today, I carry off Rose Maybud and atone with a cathedral. This is what it is to be the sport and toy of a picture gallery. But I will be bitterly revenged upon them. I will give them all to the nation, and nobody shall ever look upon their faces again.
Ask your honest pardon, but...
Ah, observed. And by a mariner. What would you with me, fellow?
Your honor, I'm a poor man-of-war's man, becalmed in the doldrums.
I don't know them.
And I make bold to ask your honor's advice. Does your honor know what it is to have a heart?
My honor knows what it is to have a complete apparatus for conducting the circulation of the blood through the veins and arteries of a human body.
Aye, but has your honor a heart that ups and looks you in the face and gives you quarterdeck orders that it's life and death to disobey?
I have not a heart of that description, but I have a picture gallery that presumes to take that liberty.
Well, your honor, it's like this. Your honor had an elder brother.
It has.
Who should have inherited your title, and with it, its curse.
Aye, but he died. Oh, Reuben!
He didn't.
He did not?
He didn't. On the contrary, he lives in this here very village under the name of...
You understand?
I think I do. With digger and second, the steps will be taken. It needs to pan.
I think so too. I readily bet it. You'll never regret it.
For duty must be done. The rule applies to everyone. And faithful over duty means return the task of
Thank you.
come. Likewise, the bride, the maidens are very elated and merry. They are her chums.
So that's the bride, but almost a pity, the pity committee.
But guilty, guilty must be done. The rule applies to everyone. And faithful though that you be,
Thank you.
room, fare you wed each other. I claim young Robin and my elder brother.
Thank you.
like you. Now that I've reformed, how I adore
you.
Better their lot, it must be. Then, that the person I'm making, the person who hates, and the person alluding to me.
Come with us now, just beyond the village, to the ancient castle of Radigor. We are in the long gallery. The walls are covered with full-length portraits of the baronets of Radigor from the time of James I. This one here is of Sir Rupert Murgatroyd, the first bad baronet on whom the witch's curse was laid. And down there, at the end of a long line of paintings, we can just make out the portrait of Sir Roderick, the last deceased baronet. Here we find Robin and his faithful old retainer, Adam. But their appearance is greatly altered since last we saw them. Robin wears the haggard aspect of a guilty roué. Adam, that of the wicked steward to such a man.
I once was as meek as a newborn lamb. I now Sir Murgatroyd. With greater precision, without the illusion, Sir Ruthven Murgatroyd. Ha!
And I, who was once his valid sham, as yours I'm now employed. The dickens may take him, I'll never forsake him, as yours I'm now employed. How dreadful man I ever was, become perforce a bad young thought, and still more hard on old Adam, is for the faithful man in his camp, is for the faithful man in his camp.
He's valid, he's valid,
he's valid, he's valid,
he's valid,
he's valid.
This is a painful state of things, old Adam.
Painful indeed. Ah, my poor master, when I swore that come what would, I would serve you in all things forever, I little thought of what a pass it would bring me. The confidential advisor to the greatest villain unhung. Now, sir, to business. What crime do you propose to commit today?
How should I know? As my confidential advisor, it is your duty to suggest something.
Sir, I loathe the life you are leading. But a good old man's oath is paramount, and I obey. Richard Dauntless is here with Pretty Rose Maybud to ask your consent to their marriage. Poison their beer.
No, not that. I know I'm a bad bat, but I'm not as bad a bat as all that.
Well, there you are, you see. It's no use my making suggestions if you don't adopt them.
How would it be, do you think, were I to lure him here with cunning wile, bind him with good stout rope to yonder post, and then by making hideous faces at him, curdle the hot blood in his arteries, and freeze the very marrow in his bones? How say you, Adam? Is not the scheme well planned?
Let it be simply rude, nothing more. Ah, but stop! They come!
Happily coupled are we, you see. I am a jolly Jack Tar, my star, and you are the fairest, the richest, and rarest of innocent glasses. You are my star of innocent glasses. You are, and by a favoring gale you sail over life's picture to sea with me. And as for bad weather, we'll brave it together, and you to creep under my lee, my wee, and you to creep under my lee, my wee. Boy, you are such a smart little craft, such a neat little sweet little craft, such a bright little tight little bright little light little trim little thin little.
My hopes are light, and I fear, my dear, in a month you'll be going to sea quite free, and all of my wishes you'll throw to the fishes as though they were never to be, to me, as though they were never to be. And I shall be left all alone to moan and weep at your growing disease complete, while you'll be asserting your freedom by flirting with every woman you meet. You cheat, ah, with every woman you meet. Ah, though I am such a smart little frog, such a beast of a sweet little frog, such a bright little tight little slice little nice little fish little prince little frog.
At last, eh? Know ye not that I have those within my call who at my lightest bidding would immure ye in an uncomfortable dungeon? What ho, within there!
Hold! We are prepared for this. Here is a flag that none dare defy. And while this glorious rag floats over Rose Maybud's head, the man does not live who would dare to lay unlicensed hand upon her.
child and by a union jack. But the time will come and then...
Nay, let me plead with him. Sir Ribbon, have pity. In my book of etiquette, the case of a maiden about to be wedded to one who unexpectedly turns out to be a baronet with a curse on him is not considered. Time was when you loved me madly. Prove that this was no selfish love by according your consent to my marriage with one who, if he be not you yourself, is the next best thing, your dearest friend.
I have fulfilled my accursed doom. I have duly committed a crime a day. Not a great crime, I trust, but still in the eyes of one as strictly regulated as I used to be, a crime. But will my ghostly ancestors be satisfied with what I have done? Or will they regard it as an unworthy subterfuge? Oh, my forefathers, wallowers in blood, there came at last a day when, sick of crime, you, each and every, vowed to sin no more, and so in agony called a welcome death to free you from your cloying guiltiness. Let the sweet psalm of that repentant hour soften your long-dead hearts and tune your souls to mercy on your poor posterity.
Thank you. With icy glare and firm relentless brow, appearest, who knows how?
I am the traitor of the late Roderick Murder Troy, who comes to warn me that I pray thou best not now avoid.
Alas, poor ghost,
the pity you express on loving ghost, we take the current joy into the group and the fool. We take the current joy into the group and the fool.
Bats in the moonlight fly, and inky clouds like little shrouds sail over the midnight sky. When the footpads wail at the night bird's wail, and black dogs bay at the moon, then is the taker's holiday, then is the ghost by noon. Then is the ghost by noon.
Jolly is soon, and ushers in our next high home.
Recognize you now. You are the picture that hangs at the end of the gallery.
In a bad light, I am.
Are you considered a good likeness?
Pretty well. Flattering.
Because as a work of art, you are poor.
That's true.
No doubt.
Cold.
Not mellow enough.
I am crude in color, but I have only been painted 10 years. In a couple of centuries, I shall be an old master, and then you will be sorry you spoke lightly of me.
And may I ask why you have left your friends?
It is our duty to see that our successors commit their daily crimes in a conscientious and workmanlike fashion. It is our duty to remind you that you are evading the conditions under which you are permitted to exist.
Really, I don't know what you'd have. I've only been a bad baronet a week, and I've committed a crime punctually every day.
Let us inquire into this Monday.
Monday was a bank holiday.
True. Tuesday.
On Tuesday, I made a false income tax return.
Ah, that's nothing.
Nothing at all.
Everybody does that.
It's expected of you.
Wednesday.
On Wednesday, I forged a will.
Whose will?
My own.
My good sir, you can't forge your own will.
Can't I, though? I like that. I did. Besides, if a man can't forge his own will, whose will can he forge?
There's something in that.
Yes, it seems reasonable.
First sight, it does.
Fallacy somewhere, I fancy.
Man can do what he likes with his own.
I suppose he can.
Well, then, he can forge his own will, stupid. On Thursday, I shot a fox.
Hear, hear.
That's better. Pass the fox, I think.
Aye.
Yes, pass the fox. Friday?
On Friday, I forged a check.
Whose check?
Old Adam's.
But old Adam hasn't a banker.
I didn't say I forged his banker. I said I forged his check.
That's true.
Yes, it seems reasonable.
Yes, well, it does.
Fallacy somewhere.
On Saturday, I disinherited my only son.
But you haven't got a son.
No, not yet. I disinherited him in advance to save time. You see, by this arrangement, he'll be born ready disinherited.
I see. But I don't think you can do that.
My good sir, if I can't disinherit my own unborn son, whose unborn son can I disinherit?
That's right enough.
Yes, it seems reasonable.
That's right, he's a
fallacy
somewhere. Yes, these arguments sound very well. But I can't help thinking that if they were reduced to syllogistic form, they wouldn't hold water. Now, quite understand us. We are foggy, but we do not permit our fogginess to be presumed upon. Unless you undertake to, well, suppose we say, carry off a lady. Those who are in favor of his carrying off a lady.
Aye.
Those of the contrary opinion.
Oh,
my Lord Bishop, you're never satisfied. Yes. Unless you undertake to carry off a lady at once, I don't care what lady, any lady, choose your lady, you perish in inconceivable agony.
Carry off a lady? Certainly not on any account. I've the greatest respect for ladies, and I wouldn't do anything of the kind for worlds. No, no, I'm not that kind of a baronet, I assure you. If that's all you've got to say, you'd better go back to your frames.
Very good. Then let the agonies commence.
Don't do that. I can't stand it.
Painful, isn't it? It gets worse by degrees.
Oh, no, no, oh, oh. Stop it. Stop it, will you? I want to speak.
Better?
Yes. Better now.
Oh. Well, do you consent?
Oh, but it's such an ungentlemanly thing to do.
As you please. Carry on.
Don't stop. I can't stand it. I agree. I promised it shall be done.
Today?
Today.
At once!
At once.
I retract. I apologize. I had no idea it was anything like that.
Master, you're not well.
Oh, Adam, it will do. I've seen them. All my ancestors, they're just gone. They say I must do something desperate at once or perish in horrible agonies. Go. Go to yonder village. Carry off a maiden. Bring her here at once. Anyone. I don't care which.
She harbors.
Not a word but a babe. Fly.
Compunction hence, go moral force, go penitence. To virtues flee along their well. Society, I ring your knell. Come, guiltiness of deadliest hue, of desperate deeds of daring do. Henceforth all the crimes that I find in the times I promise to perpetrate gave. Tomorrow I start with a petrified heart on a regular course of old berries. This confidence picking, bad coin pocket picking, and several other disgraces. This postage stamp pricking and then thimble ringing, the three card delusion that races. Oh, a baronet's rank is exceedingly nice, but the title's uncommonly dear at the price. Ye well-to-do squires who live in the shires where petty distinctions are vital. Found athenaeums and local museums with views to a baronet's title. Ye butchers and bakers and candlestick makers and sneer at all things that are trading, whose middle class lives have embarrassed my wife, who long to praise us, my lady. Oh, allow me to offer a word of advice, the title's uncommonly dear and the price. Supple MPs who go down on your knees, your precious identity is sinking, and vote black or white as your leaders indict, which saves you the trouble of thinking. For your country's good fame, her repute or a shame, you don't care a snuff of a candle, but you're paid for your game and you're told that your name will be graced by a baronet's handle. Oh, allow me to give you a word of advice, the title's uncommonly dear and the price.
Now, into the empty gallery come Sir Despard and Mad Margaret. They too look very different to when we last met them, being dressed in sober black and an air of complacent respectability.
For my wild extravagance. But be so kind to bear in mind,
we were the victims of circumstances. I was once an exceedingly odd young lady,
suffering much from spleen and vapors.
Clergyman thought my conduct shady.
He didn't spend much upon linen drapers.
It certainly entertained the gapers. My ways were strange beyond all range.
Paragraph got into all the papers. We only can't respect the papers. I've given up all my wild proceedings.
My taste for a wandering life is waning.
Now I'm as deaf as penny reading.
They are most remarkably entertaining.
A moderate livelihood we're gaining.
We rule a national school.
The beauties are dull, but I'm not complaining. This sort of thing takes a deal of training.
We have been married a week.
One happy, happy week.
Our new life
is delightful indeed.
So calm.
So pure.
So peaceful.
So unimpassioned. Master, all this I owe to you. See, I am no longer wild and untidy. My hair is combed, my face is washed, my boots fit.
Margaret, don't. Pray restrain yourself. Remember, you are now a district visitor.
A gentle district visitor.
You are orderly, methodical, neat. You have your emotions well under control.
I have. Master, when I think of all you have done for me, I fall at your feet. I embrace your ankles. I hug your knees.
Hush, this is not well. Oh. This is calculated to provoke remark. Be composed, I beg.
You are angry with poor little Mad Margaret?
No, not angry. But a district visitor should learn to eschew melodrama. Visit the poor, by all means, and give them tea and barley water. But don't do it as if you were administering a bowl of deadly nightshade. It upsets them. Then when you nurse sick people and find them not as well as could be expected, why go into hysterics?
Why not?
Because it's too jumpy for a sick room.
How strange. Oh, Master, Master, how shall I express the all-absorbing gratitude that
now.
I... Yes, I know, dear. It shan't occur again. Oh, shall I tell you one of poor Mad Margaret's odd thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, when I am lying awake at night and the pale moonlight streams through the latticed casement, strange fancies crowd upon my poor mad brain, and I sometimes think that if we could hit upon some word for you to use whenever I am about to relapse, some word that teems with hidden meaning, like Basingstoke. It might recall me to my saner self. For after all, I am only Mad Margaret. Staff Meg. Poor Peg.
Poor child, she wanders. But soft, someone comes. Margaret, pray recollect yourself. Basingstoke, I beg. Margaret, if you don't Basingstoke at once, I shall be seriously angry.
Basingstoke it is.
But then make it so.
Despard and his young wife.
This visit is unexpected.
Shall I fly at him? Shall I tear him limb from limb? Shall I rend him asunder? Say but the word.
Basingstoke.
Basingstoke it is.
Then make it so. My brother, I call you brother still, despite your horrible profligacy. We have come to urge you to abandon the evil courses to which you have committed yourself, and at any cost to become a pure and blameless ratepayer.
But I've done no wrong yet.
No wrong? He has done no wrong? Did you hear that?
Basingstoke.
Basingstoke it is.
My brother, I still call you brother, you observe. You forget that you have been in the eye of the law, a bad baronet of Radigore for 10 years. And you are therefore responsible in the eye of the law for all the misdeeds committed by the unhappy gentleman who occupied your place.
I see. Bless my heart, I never thought of that. Was I very bad?
Awful, wasn't he?
And I've been going on like this for how long?
10 years. Think of all the atrocities you have committed by attorney, as it were, during that period. Remember how you trifled with this poor child's affection, how you raised her hopes on high. Oh, well, I'll feed you, Stoke, you know, only to trample them in the dust when they were at the very zenith of their foolishness. Oh, fie, sir, fie. She trusted you.
Did she? What a scoundrel I must have been. There, there, don't cry, my dear. It's all right now. Birmingham, you know, Birmingham.
Basingstoke.
Basingstoke, of course it is. Basingstoke.
Then make it so.
There, there, it's all right. He's married you now. That is, I've married you. I say, which of us has married her?
Oh, I've married her.
Oh, I'm glad of that. Yes, he's married you now, and anything more disreputable than my conduct seems to have been, I've never even heard of. But my mind is made up. I will defy my ancestors. I will refuse to obey their behests. Thus, by courting death, atone in some degree for the infamy of my career.
I knew it! I knew it! God bless you!
Basingstoke.
Basingstoke it is.
Eyes are fully open to my awful situation. I should go at once to Roderick and make him an oration. I should tell him I've recovered my forgotten moral sense, and I don't get up a sleep in it for any consequences. Now I do not want to perish by the thought of either dagger, but the mother may indulge a little pardon or swagger, and a word or two of condom, but my vanity to flatter. But I've got the die tomorrow, so it really doesn't matter.
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 Matter.
If I were not a little man and generally silly, I should give you my advice upon a subject willy-nilly. I should show you in a moment how to grapple with the question, and you'd really be astonished at the force of my suggestion on a subject I shall write you almost valuable, a letter full of excellent suggestions when I feel a little better. For the present, I'm afraid I haven't mattered very happy, so I keep them to myself, for my opinion doesn't matter.
Her opinion doesn't matter. Her opinion doesn't matter. Her opinion doesn't matter.
My opinion doesn't matter.
Her opinion doesn't matter.
My opinion doesn't matter.
If I had been so lucky as to have a steady brother who could talk to me as we are talking now to one another, who could give me good advice when he discovered I was erring, is it just the very favor which a new wife of her existence would have made a rather interesting evil? I might have lived and died a very decent individual. The particularly ragged, unintelligible fellow is generally her, and if it is, it doesn't matter.
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 Master, the deed is done.
What deed?
She is here, alone, unprotected.
Who?
The maiden. Oh, I've carried her off. I had a hard task. She fought like a tiger cat.
Great heavens, I had forgotten her. I had hoped to die unspotted by crime, but I am foiled again by a tiger cat. Produce her. And leave us.
Well, sir.
Dame Hannah, this is not what I expected.
And what would you with me? Oh, you have begun bravely, bravely indeed. Unappalled by the calm dignity of blameless womanhood, your minion has torn me from my spotless home and dragged me blindfold and shrieking through hedges, over stiles, and across a very difficult country, and left me helpless and trembling at your mercy.
Oh, madam.
Yes, not helpless, coward sir. For approach one step, nay, but the 20th part of one poor inch, and this poniard shall teach you what it is to lay unholy hands on old Stephen Trusty's daughter.
Madam, I'm very sorry for this. It is not at all what I intended. Anything more correct, more deeply respectful than my intentions toward you, it would be impossible for anybody, however particular, to decide.
Ah! I am not to be tricked by smooth words, hypocrite. But be warned in time. For there are, without, 100 gallant hearts whose trusty blade would hack him limb from limb who dared to lay unholy hands on old Stephen Trusty's daughter.
Then this is what it is to embark upon a career of unlicensed pleasure.
Hark ye, miscreant, you have secured me, and I am your poor prisoner. But if you think I cannot take care of myself, you are very much mistaken. Now then, it's 1-1. And let the best man win!
No, don't! Don't look at me like that! I can't bear it! Roderick! Uncle! Save me!
he found that he was fickle, was the cradle free. She was in a pretty pickle, as she well might be. But his gallantry was fickle, for death followed with his sickle, and the tears began to trickle for the cradle free. Sing hey, bless the day.
Thank you.
In that complete performance of Rudigore by W.S. Gilbert and Arthur Sullivan, Robin Oakapple was played by Peter Pratt. Richard Dauntless was sung by John Fryatt and spoken by Barry Ingham. Sir Despard Murgatroyd was played by Alan Dudley. Old Adam Goodhart was sung by Norman Lumsden and spoken by Earl Grey. Rose Maybud was sung by Ellen Dales and spoken by Meg Wynne Owen. Mad Margaret was played by Patricia Routledge. Dame Hannah was sung by Monica Sinclair and spoken by Shirley Cooklin. Sir Roderick Murgatroyd was sung by Forbes Robinson and spoken by Julian Summers. Zora was sung by Joan Brown and spoken by Sheila Hammond. Ruth was spoken by Wendy Lovelock. The village's corps of bridesmaids, the ghosts of the Murgatroyds, and Sir Despard Murgatroyd's house guests were the John McCarthy singers. You also heard the BBC Concert Orchestra, leader Arthur Levins. The performance was conducted by Stanford Robinson and produced by Michael...